You know how everyone like always talks about Vegas casino architecture?
Oh yeah, the loud carpets and everything.
Right, the loud carpets, the total lack of windows, you know, no clocks on the walls anywhere. We tend to think of those things as the traps.
But they're really just the window dressing. I mean, the real trap in a casino isn't the floor plan at all.
Exactly. It's the invisible math. It's this illusion of chance. You pull a lever thinking you're the one initiating a random event, but the machine's processor, it has already decided your outcome before the first cherry even clicks into place on the screen.
Right. The suspense is really just a movie you're watching, which works perfectly because your brain is hardwired to seek patterns, you know? You want to assign meaning to your own physical actions. If you pull the lever, you feel responsible for the result.
Yeah, but what if that exact same mathematical certainty, like that exact same psychological trap, isn't just in Vegas anymore?
Well, that's exactly what we're getting into today.
Right. Today, we are looking at the invisible architecture that is actively trapping your attention. And we're doing it by connecting the dots between four things from our source material that, honestly, on the surface, shouldn't be connected at all.
They really seem entirely unrelated at first glance.
Yeah, we've got UI teardowns of the Temu app, a completely bizarre viral soap opera, an analysis of global Google search data, and some pretty terrifying psychiatric statistics out of the United Kingdom.
I know it sounds like, a conspiracy board covered in red string, but I assure you, the underlying mechanism connecting these sources is incredibly grounded. We are looking at what actually happens when human perception meets a perfectly optimized machine.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Our mission for this deep dive is to uncover this hidden structural blueprint that modern e-commerce and digital entertainment just like share.
Right, a structure actively designed to corner your attention.
Exactly. And we're going to explore the very real psychological fallout this environment is having on our collective grip on reality. So if you've ever found yourself, you know, mindlessly tapping through an app, spending money or time, and then suddenly waking up from a daze thinking, wait, how did I get here? Well, this deep dive will reveal exactly how that feeling is engineered piece by piece.
Let's start with the shopping side of the equation, the UI teardowns of the Temu app from our sources.
Man, looking at these notes, it is wild. You log in and you are just immediately assaulted by free items and like $600 coupons everywhere.
Yeah, the sensory overload is very intentional.
And there are these ticking timers counting down the seconds to some arbitrary deadline. And then there are the mini games. There's this farmland game where you supposedly water digital crops to unlock a physical reward that gets shipped to your house.
But the progress bar always stalls out.
Yes, it always stalls at like 90 or 99% completion. You are always just like one drop of water away.
So what's fascinating here is the underlying psychology. The research actually refers to this as a neural exploit chain.
A neural exploit chain. That
Yes, sir.
sounds intense.
It is, yeah. I mean, most traditional apps might use one or two cognitive biases to keep you engaged, like a red notification badge, for instance. This platform, however, stacks them.
Right. They just pile them on.
Exactly. You have the near-miss effect with that 99% progress bar, which triggers dopamine precisely because you didn't quite get there yet. And then you stack on loss aversion and sunk cost.
Because you've already spent like 5 minutes watering digital wheat.
Right. Walking away now just feels like leaving money on the table.
It totally suppresses your analytical thinking. You aren't sitting there asking if you actually need a $3 garlic press. You're just asking how to beat the wheat game.
Exactly.
But here's where it gets really interesting in the source material. The teardown zeroes in on a spinning wheel mini game for discounts. It notes that when you tap the screen to stop the wheel, the third tap is always the one that wins, every single time.
For every single user. Which brings us to one of the most critical structural concepts in our deep dive today. The sources call it the reverse Plinko board.
Okay, I love a good game show analogy, but like a regular Plinko board is pure chance. You drop a chip at the top, it bounces randomly off a bunch of pegs, and you have this forward uncertainty leading to one of many possible outcomes at the bottom. How do you reverse that?
Well, you flip the timeline of the decision. In a reverse Plinko board, the system already knows exactly which hole you are going to land in at the bottom.
Wait, really?
Yeah, it knows what reward you will get and when you will get it before you even open the app. Everything that happens before that.
The spinning wheels, the near misses.
Exactly. The fact that it requires exactly three taps, it's all just a theatrical branching path. It is backward certainty masquerading as forward uncertainty.
Wait, hold on. Are you saying my choices literally don't matter? If I wait 10 seconds to tap, or tap immediately, the app was always going to give me the 20% off coupon. I mean, that borders on a conspiracy theory. How can a basic shopping app know what I'm going to do before I do it?
Well, it doesn't need to know what you will do. It just needs to control the environment you do it in.
Hmm.
The sources call this retrofitted causality.
Retrofitted causality.
Right. Think about it. If the app just handed you a 20% off coupon the second you opened it, your brain would categorize it as generic marketing spam. You'd completely ignore it.
Yeah. I close out of those pop-ups instantly.
Exactly. But if the app forces you to tap three times, where tap one builds curiosity, tap two builds doubt because you quote unquote missed, and tap three gives the reward, your brain automatically builds a narrative.
Oh, wow.
You tell yourself that your timing, your skill, actually influence the result.
So it's giving you the illusion of agency without actual control. You sit there thinking, oh man, I got lucky, or I played that really well, instead of realizing, oh, I was just guided to a predetermined win on a set schedule.
That is the core of the engine right there. It is a deterministic system wearing a mask of randomness. And the reason it is so devastatingly effective is that it paces you toward a scheduled conversion. It literally stabilizes your behavior into a rhythm.
Wow. So by the time you actually put your credit card in to buy that garlic press, it just feels like the natural, victorious conclusion to the game you've been playing.
Exactly.
So if a shopping app hacks our behavioral loops by pretending the outcome is random, what happens when you apply that exact same mathematical certainty to human empathy? Let's talk about the vertical dramas.
Yeah, this is where we cross from behavioral manipulation into pure emotional manipulation.
The sources highlight this massive explosion in vertical short dramas. These are those ultra-compressed, like, micro-episodes you see in apps like ShortMax, shot entirely in portrait mode for your phone.
Right. Designed specifically for mobile.
Yeah. And the case study in the stack is a 26-episode series called The Deadly Honesty Necklace. Search code OB063.
It's an incredibly dark, almost suffocating example of the format, honestly.
It really is. Let me give a listener a quick plot summary because it is wild. So it's about a mother, Dr. Lena Voss, who invents an honesty necklace for her twin daughters, Stella and Emma.
And it's presented as this perfect, infallible, scientific parenting system.
Right. It lights up if the kids lie.
Mm-hmm.
But the necklace has a fatal flaw. It punishes Stella whenever she feels genuine fear or physical discomfort because it interprets her elevated heart rate and distress as lying.
And the mother, because she trusts her own technology over her actual child, completely dismisses the suffering.
She literally thinks Stella is just seeking attention. It escalates over these tiny 2-minute episodes until Stella actually dies from an undiagnosed medical emergency right at her desk.
It's awful.
And the mother walks in, finds her, assumes she's just faking sleep to manipulate her, and just walks away.
Wow.
Yeah. The rest of the series becomes this heavy supernatural melodrama where Stella's ghost haunts the family. The mother is slowly destroyed by the realization that her flawless technology literally weaponized her child's fear against her.
And if we look at the geographic and demographic data for this specific show, it reveals so much. The viewership heat maps show massive disproportionate engagement in the South and Southwest of the United States.
Right. The sources pointed out Texas.
Yeah. The Dallas-Fort Worth area is a glowing red hotspot. And the core demographic driving this is women aged 18 to 35.
Okay, but wait. I'm trying to connect this back. Temu is interactive. You tap, you play a game, you buy. Watching a drama on your phone is passive.
Yeah.
So how does a passive video create a reverse Plinko illusion? Why is this specific format exploding with that demographic?
Well, because watching these vertical dramas isn't actually passive at all. The swipe is the tap.
Oh.
Yeah, these shows are architected to function identically to Temu's UI. They compress narrative into these high-frequency emotional bursts. You get an immediate injustice in minute one, like the child being punished unfairly. You get intense emotional destabilization in minute two. The tension peaks, the episode abruptly ends, and you are forced to swipe to get the catharsis. The algorithm measures your hesitation. It measures how fast you swipe.
So the emotional spike is the 20% off coupon.
Yes, exactly. The system knows exactly which emotional trigger will force you to perform the action of swiping. It is pacing you toward an emotional breakdown and resolution, tracking your retention rate down to the millisecond.
That is wild.
Your choice to keep watching is an illusion, because the content was algorithmically generated to perfectly exploit your specific empathy triggers.
You know, the dark irony here is so loud. The mother in the show weaponized technology to enforce a flawless system, but her system misread human suffering as a glitch.
Right.
That is a direct, almost sickening metaphor for what the algorithmic feeds driving these very shows are doing to the audience.
Because the algorithm doesn't care about the emotional toll it takes on the viewer. It doesn't register exhaustion or sadness. It only optimizes for the reaction. It only cares that you swipe to episode 14.
Which brings us to the real-world fallout. Because if you have behavioral loops dictating your shopping and emotional loops dictating your entertainment, what happens to the human brain caught in the middle of all that mathematical certainty?
The clinical data in our sources suggests that we are looking at a population whose brains are quite literally beginning to reject the simulation.
Let's dig into that data, because this is where the deep dive gets incredibly serious. The sources analyze global Google trends, specifically highlighting massive spikes for the term derealization.
Right, and derealization is a severe psychological state. It is a dissociative symptom where the physical world around you suddenly feels unreal or distant or artificially constructed.
So it's not just spacing out.
No, patients describe it as feeling like they're suddenly an observer of their own life, like watching a movie of themselves rather than actually participating in reality.
So for someone listening to this right now who maybe feels a little disconnected after doom scrolling for an hour on their couch, is that a microdose of derealization? Are we all experiencing a mild version of what these statistics are tracking?
In a sense, yeah, we are. Doom scrolling induces a mild trance state that detaches you from your physical environment. But the data we are looking at tracks when that state becomes clinically dangerous.
Right.
The search data shows massive sustained spikes for derealization in 2021 and again in 2025. And this perfectly overlays with psychiatric statistics from the UK's National Health Service, the NHS. They track referrals for what is called first episode psychosis, or FEP.
Could you explain what that metric means? Because psychosis is a heavy word.
It is. A first episode of psychosis involves a severe clinical break from reality. This isn't just feeling spacey. This is hallucinations, deeply held delusions, and profound cognitive disorientation. It requires immediate psychiatric intervention.
And the NHS data in the stack shows that from 2016 to 2019, those referral rates were essentially a flat line. They had a completely stable, predictable baseline.
Yes, until the spring of 2020.
Right. Following the March 2020 lockdown, they started climbing. By April 2021, they had skyrocketed by 29%.
A 29% jump in population-level psychosis referrals in a single year is a staggering structural break. It indicates an environmental trigger on a massive scale.
Now, obviously, the 2020 lockdown and the pandemic were major triggers. I mean, the social isolation alone was devastating. But the source documents point to a rupture that started earlier. They argue that the isolation of 2020 just poured gasoline on an algorithmic fire that started in 2018.
Yes. The data suggests the cognitive foundation for this mental health crisis was laid before the physical lockdowns even began. And it traces back to a concept the archive logs call retrocausal drift.
Okay, let's slow down here. Retrocausal drift. That sounds incredibly dense. Why is it called retrocausal, meaning backward causation? And what exactly drifted?
To understand it, you really have to look at how social platforms fundamentally shifted their architecture around 2018. Prior to that, most feeds were chronological.
Right.
You saw what your friends posted in the order they posted it. A chronological feed represents a shared objective reality. Time moves forward for everyone.
Right. If someone posted at noon, it's above the post from 11 a.m.
Yeah.
It makes logical sense.
Exactly. But in 2018, the major platforms fully transitioned to engagement-ranked algorithms. Sequence was no longer a given. The platforms began predicting what would keep you on the app longest and rewriting the timeline of your feed to justify your current attention.
Wow.
So the outcome, your attention, dictated what was populated in your past feed. That is a retrocausal element. Reality on your screen was no longer ordered by time. It was assembled in a solipsistic time loop designed just for you.
And the sources specifically mention the aftermath of the Charlottesville protests in this context. And they handle it purely as a structural data point, right? Just observing how physical mobilization violently intersected with this new digital fragmentation.
Yes, it is a textbook example of two feedback loops amplifying each other. You had intense physical world events happening simultaneously with a digital network that had just stopped prioritizing shared chronological truth.
Right.
When you optimize a global communication network strictly for retention, you inherently compress the decision space. Everyone is thrust into their own custom-built reverse Plinko board, continually triggered by whatever emotional payload keeps them swiping.
So that platform shift perfectly set the stage for 2020. when the physical world locked down and we all retreated into our screens, the digital loops were already fully mature. They were just waiting to capture all that displaced human attention.
And when reality itself begins to feel like an endless feed, and human narratives are compressed into high-frequency, algorithmic bursts, well, perception fractures.
It has to.
The brain simply cannot sustain that level of constant, manipulated emotional spiking without a defense mechanism. That 29% rise in psychosis and the massive spikes in derealization searches, that is the human side signal. It is the canary in the coal mine showing what happens when enough of these systems operate on us simultaneously.
So what does this all mean? How do we even conceptualize an architecture that is this pervasive?
Mm-hmm.
The archive logs in our sources provide a philosophical framework for it, but I gotta be honest, it gets really abstract.
They refer to this overarching structure as the Möbius engine.
Right, and then the logs use these intense physics analogies.
Yeah.
They compare these digital platforms to a non-orientable manifold or Kerr-Penrose closed time-like curves. And I'm just like, whoa, okay, stop. Kerr-Penrose, closed time-like curves. You're going to have to translate that into English for me because right now it sounds like we're pitching a sci-fi script.
Fair enough, yeah. Let's strip away the quantum physics jargon.
Right.
Think of the Möbius engine like walking into a massive windowless shopping mall.
Okay, I'm with you.
You walk through the doors, you browse a store, and when you try to leave, the exit door just leads you into another slightly more personalized store. And as you keep walking, you slowly realize the architecture of the mall is actively shifting behind you.
So you literally can't find the parking lot.
Exactly. You are on a Möbius strip, you know, a loop with a half twist that only has one continuous surface. If you walk along it, you never find an edge. In the context of these apps, there is no clear boundary between the game and the store.
Right.
There is no line between watching a drama and feeling your own genuine anxiety. The outcome generates the path that leads to the outcome.
This raises an intensely foundational question for you, the listener. If the house doesn't just win, but the house, I guess the outcome, where does our agency actually sit? Are we just the bead falling down the Plinko board, totally convinced we're steering when gravity and the pegs are doing all the work?
It's a profoundly unsettling question, honestly. Agency within these closed digital loops is very often just a narrative you construct to make sense of a path that was predetermined for you. You think you chose to buy that discounted gadget. You think you chose to binge that tragic microdrama.
But the system had already calculated the exact psychological interval required to make you yield.
Yes.
So we're just trapped in the mall.
Not entirely. And this is where the archive logs offer a crucial, practical reassurance. Amidst all this deterministic architecture, they highlight a specific anomaly in the system. They call it the pause.
The pause. Okay.
Yes. When an observer, meaning when you become consciously aware of the loop and you physically hesitate before tapping the screen, you introduce variance.
Interesting.
It's a moment of cognitive friction where your own pattern recognition breaks the automation of the app. And variance is the one thing a perfectly deterministic algorithmic model cannot fully predict.
Let me see if I'm tracking this. Just the act of knowing how the trick works, like knowing about the reverse Plinko board, gives you a fraction of a second to step outside the illusion.
Exactly. The moment you can describe the architecture trapping you, you are no longer just the blind bead bouncing down the board. You are partially outside of it. You regain a sliver of actual agency.
Man. To recap this incredible, albeit terrifying, journey we've been on today, We started with this fake urgency of a Temu spinning wheel. We unpacked how that reverse Plinko board dictates your wins and creates retrofitted causality.
Right.
And we saw how that exact same structural loop is used to compress our empathy in vertical short dramas like The Deadly Honesty Necklace, literally turning our own emotional catharsis into a retention metric.
And we tracked how those combined behavioral forces aligned with a massive platform shift toward algorithmic feeds in 2018, a shift that fundamentally rewrote our shared chronological reality, ultimately culminating in a startling 29% rise in clinical psychosis and massive spikes in derealization by 2021.
So the next time you find yourself stuck at 99% on a progress bar, or you're endlessly swiping through a tragic, hyper-compressed microdrama, I want you to remember the reverse Plinko board. The system desperately wants you to feel like you're making free choices, but it's really just pacing you toward a scheduled conversion. You have to find the pause.
You have to introduce variance to break the loop.
But I want to leave you with one final chilling detail we uncovered in the data research for this deep dive. When the researchers tried to pull historical Google Trends data to track the baseline of these psychological shifts, specifically looking for the overall top global search queries from the years 2010 to 2018, they couldn't do it.
No, The data isn't there anymore.
It's structurally inaccessible to the public. Google has quietly replaced its historical archive with a rolling 5-year window. The digital memory of what the world cared about, of what shared reality looked like before the algorithms fully took over, is actively being overwritten. So I ask you, if the very systems architecting our continuous engagement loops are also erasing the digital memory of what reality looked like before the loop existed, well, how long until we forget there was ever an outside to the Möbius strip at all?